Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll talk about the future of the regional bloc, the East African Community. And with us tonight is Charles Mwanguhia Mpagi. He's the Bureau Chief for the East Africa newspaper in Kampala. And he joins us by phone from there. Good evening, Charles.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're very much welcome. And we're also joined by regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas.
Gentlemen, as
Thank
I said,
you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. As I said, our topic tonight is the future of the East African community. The East African community is a regional intergovernmental organization of six partner states: Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, South Sudan, Tanzania, and Uganda, with its headquarters in Arusha, Tanzania. The old East African community came crashing down in 1977, but because of political differences between the leaders. But because through rebirth and enlargement, though, the new East African community has again risen to great heights as one of the most successful integration schemes on the African continent. But recent developments are stark reminders of some of the difficulties that precipitated the demise of that previous integration experiment. For instance, the Heads of State Summit, initially scheduled for December 3rd in Arusha, has been postponed because of regional tensions. The East African community denies regional tensions were the cause and blames lack of quorum. So let's start from there, Charles. Give us a picture of what you're picking up in the region.
Over the last few years, the regional summit of the heads of state has been troubled. During the leadership of President Yoweri Museveni of Uganda, the community hardly held any successful summit. And now, under the leadership of President Paul Kagame, also the summits have become difficult to hold because it's difficult to bring all the leaders of the six member countries together in one room for the discussion about the East African community. So the community has suffered at two critical levels. One, it has suffered at the level of political cohesion among its leaders, but also that has led to another major challenge, which has been the funding of its secretariat in Arusha to be able to execute some of its responsibilities, as some of the governments hold back the money or are reluctant to put in money. Obviously, that holds back a lot of other activities. I need to bring you, Douglas, and Mr. Mugula, and the listeners, that just last week on Monday, President Yoweri Museveni held a meeting in Kampala of a panel of experts he is leading to try and create a draft of a constitution for a political confederation. And now this is a big journey for the 20-year-old East African community, which had initially envisaged moving towards political federation, which has now been changed to focusing on political confederation.
I see. Suleiman, from afar, as we said, this new East African community, 20 years now, It had seemed that taking great strides to not face the same fate like the old one.
Douglas, much as it there are some good developments, but the new one was established as a nostalgia. But the conditions which, from the beginning, it was very clear that it will have so many hurdles to jump. To begin with, the first one, when it was established, the economies of the three countries, the political, social, and economic development of the three principal countries by then was almost going at the same time. Number two, when it was established on solid ground and established very, very good institutions which became the cooperatives. When you talk of the East African ways, the postal service, the railways, and so on, all these ones were generating income. The way Nsamangwe has said, at the moment they don't even have the money to sustain the secretariat because they don't even have income. By then they were able to generate income. Okay, let me go back. As I was saying, there was a degree of economic. They were almost growing at the same economic level. There was some degree of political similarity, and then socially also. Now, this time when they are re-establishing it, the situation had already changed. The countries had grown in different directions, politically, socially, economically. Politically, at the moment, you find that you have got different political systems. You have got fully fledged military dictatorship in four partner states, and then Kenya, a democratic system, Tanzania, a quasi-democratic system. Now, when you look at it, as our brother is saying about the confederation, it is very difficult to mix these military leaders to the other one who are the democratic and the quasi-democratic one.
I see.
So are the economies. So those are some of the factors which are hitting this one. When you look at it, you can see that it's very difficult to combine these three or these six countries as they are because of the various levels of development, economically, politically, which they are at this particular point in time.
I see. Charles, leaving alone the level of development politically and economically, it appears to me and some others that the tension between Rwanda and Uganda and between Rwanda and Burundi maybe could not allow for a summit to take place, a fruitful summit to take place.
Yes, the leaders will deny that. They will say there are other factors delaying, but, you know, President Kagame is the leadership and is supposed to turning over, moving toward handing over someone else, and he has taken over from President Yoweri Museveni. But, yes, we've had there's been tension, serious political disagreements between Kigali and Kampala for a time. From February 28th until today, the common border between Uganda and Rwanda remains closed, but also movement between Rwanda and Burundi has been difficult for quite a long time, with the counter-accusations between the leaders of the two countries over who is sponsoring dissident groups operating or destabilizing forces operating in either in the other territory. Now, that if you put that together with what we have seen before, a time when on major infrastructure projects like Suleiman was talking about that link the actual people of the East African community, like the Standard Gauge Railway, the discussion at some stage shifted to a coalition of the willing. The discussion about moving on with a political federation had also moved toward a coalition of the willing. So there is no harmony among the leaders, and some of these leaders hold a lot of sway. Now, the two you're talking about, President Yoweri Museveni and President Paul Kagame, have been in power longest of all the leaders of the South African community. You have, in that mix, you had President Pierre Nkurunziza of Burundi, who has also been around longer. In Kenya, President Uhuru Kenyatta is supposed to be relinquishing power in about a year from now. President John Pombe Magufuli will also not be around too long. That creates a very difficult situation for the community to sit and have a discussion and push forward a common agenda. Because they've been around, they think they know what should be, what is good even for the region and for their own countries, and others are thinking institutional. That creates obvious disharmony.
I see. Suleiman, I think you alluded to this earlier on. In such a divergent political governance systems in the six countries, can you sincerely have a community of nations working together?
They can't. And as apart from what Charles is saying, apart from Uganda and Rwanda and Burundi, even there is mutual suspicion between the other countries. For example, it is very clear that at the moment, Kenya is not comfortable with Uganda's leadership. For example, as Charles said, they started the railway program together. because of poor leadership in Uganda, the Kenyans were able to run the line from Mombasa, they are adding it westward. Uganda has not even started an inch on one of them. That is number one. Number two, both countries discovered oil. The oil in Kenya is flowing. Uganda has failed to put out even a single gallon of oil from the ground. Number three, Uganda, at first, it had a proposal of running the pipeline through Kenya, which was sensible because the infrastructure there is friendly because historically it is easier to run. Here they are. They want to go and take the first look as if they will do it. I'm sure even when Kenya was agreeing on the project, it knew that it would be to the advantage of Uganda because it had already had the system going that way, like for example through the railway system. But here comes Uganda somersaults and wants to take an oil pipeline from Kizer. So Kenya, with its political involvement, with its institution, you can see that it starts to doubt the integrity, the seriousness of the leadership in Uganda. Though it cannot openly say it, but I mean, it is just mere common sense that one can see that there is lack of leadership in Uganda. So if there is suspicion, even Tanzania themselves, you remember, not long ago, the Tanzanians were closing out sugar from Uganda within the free trade area. They are not ready to allow things from Uganda because they feel those ones from Uganda are imported from somewhere. It is a secondary importation to their own country. Why? Because of poor leadership. So to add on what Charles has said, so long as there is no sustainable political system in the whole region, so long as the other four partner states have not become politically stable and they remain fragile, it will be very difficult to get consensus on the political, social, and economic development of the region through the East African Community.
Yes, but Charles, wouldn't these who started the new East African Community have taken into consideration what was the cause of the demise of the old one? Because it was primarily as a result of the disagreement between late President Nyerere and President Idi Amin. So there was nothing in the new charter that provided for such ways of resolving those issues, because Amin couldn't agree with Nyerere and the thing fell apart.
Is that
Douglas? Yeah, Charles, yes, I was referring to why they didn't look ahead and imagine a situation that for the incompatible leaders, the thing couldn't work.
No, but I think that's the difference between this community and the old community. One, you must give credit that the current East African community has already lived longer than the old East African community. The new East African community is celebrating 20 years this month, which is the same as that we are the East African newspaper also celebrating 25 years of existence. Mm-hmm. We were eating cake earlier today. The thing, Douglas, is that these disagreements are there. But if you gauge the spirit of the people of East Africa, the feeling of community, the result about what it should be is generally a lot more positive than it was shortly after independence in 1960 and 1970s when we had the first East African community. Yes, disagreements between leaders do exist. They hamper a lot of the activities of the community secretariat joint activities, but some activities still even go on. Now, the expectation of some analysts and critics here of the community is that it will be able to outlive a particular individual interests of some of the leaders today. Those who might wish to say, if you transition from your country, you don't want to maybe to give up power before you realize the dream of being the champion of creating a political federation of or a political union of the East African community. Whether that happens today or tomorrow, or a few years from now, the world is moving towards integration, not disintegration. And the expectation is that at some stage, these or these parochial political interests will be superseded by the actual socioeconomic needs of the peoples of the region. Now, let me just add one thing. If you realize, Douglas, that beyond the tensions between Kampala and Kigali, and between Kigali and Bujumbura, you also have basically dysfunctional members of the community. South Sudan, for one, joined, and many people think it joined in a rush, shouldn't have been allowed to join at the time, shouldn't have qualified at the time, because it wasn't ready yet to join the community. Burundi has been extremely dysfunctional for a long time, sometimes looking south, sometimes looking south.
Have we lost Charles? Charles, are you still there?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, I thought yes, I lost you. Yeah, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Yes. All those come into play when you're gauging the health, the pulse of the current South African community, and they are critical to its long-term survival.
I see. Well, for those who are just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're talking about the future of the East African community. Our panelists are Charles Mwangushi Ampagi, East African Bureau Chief in Kampala, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Suleiman, Charles there referred to the some countries, actually. This new community tried to expand at a faster rate in bringing in the youngest nation, South Sudan. Burundi was still out of civil war, and then they just joined, and they've been sort of dysfunctional. Okay, the community is anchored by Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania, just like the old community. So, but people have argued that it should be the people themselves are more or less integrated. It's just the leadership that is faltering and trying all ways of getting a federation. Do you agree to that opinion?
There is no doubt that with a population over 100 million, when combined together, maybe close to 170, there are lots of benefits for the cooperation within the region. There will be a lot of benefits. And even looking at the historical perspective, now expanding it from three would mean more benefits, economic benefits. A free trade area taking all those three countries will be good. But as you are saying, as Charles has said, first of all, it was dead on arrival the moment it based itself on more on leadership other than the member states themselves. Where it's supposed to be an intergovernment organization, it ended up starting as a brotherhood organization within the leadership itself. Failure to dissociate it from there, that is the first weakness which it got. If it was rooted into institutions within the governments themselves, I think it would have been better. But if people have to rely on that visionary leader or that absolute leader to determine whatever is being done, sometimes playing on his egos where he wants to be the chairman or the initiator of this one, that has also created the problems, and it is going down to hurt the organization. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, as you have said, there are lots of benefits. That population working together, it will be very good, and even the people on the ground would enjoy. I think it was hurried too much. If they had gone slower, if they had looked at the fundamentals first and realized that they are growing, they have grown at different levels, and then look, maybe first do preferential treatment of one another in the various fields, preferential cooperation in various fields before they solidify it to the levels which they have done. I think it would have been better, first of all, to take it to allow preferential treatment of one another, and then they go on upgrading it. The problem was that they wanted to reestablish the one which collapsed in 1997, whereas the conditions and time were totally different.
Charles, would you agree that the top bottom rather than bottom up could be a problem?
Yes, it is, because these minor inconveniences of ordinary people and an agenda driven at the top, like this one has been, For the last 20 years, the leaders have been talking about a community-led East African community, but you don't see the community leadership. Douglas and Suleiman and our listeners, I'll take you back some 3 years ago. We at the East African in Kampala deployed one of our team here, a gentleman called Julius Bargeba, one of our senior dentists, and he traveled with a team of cyclists who wanted to test out what it means for this East African community. And from Kampala, they drove through Kenya, then Tanzania, came through Burundi, through Kigali, and came back to Kampala. But the experiences on the ground was that you don't have this feeling like it is free. Yes, for people flying in and out of the capitals of the different countries, you will find some semblance of community. Because now you can fly from Kampala to any of the capitals of the East African community using just your national ID in Uganda, and you can do vice versa from the other capitals. But the eyes that are looking at you, the questions about how long you're staying, and you're saying, no, the idea of the community is that I should be able to go into Kigali, spend a weekend without being asked how many days are you staying here, where will you be staying, and questions like that. Meaning that the community is not yet fully integrated. You've had the stories of Tanzania attending Ugandan pastoralists from across the border from looking for pastors. Stories of Tanzania doing the same to Kenyan pastoralists. Those, you think that the community is actually not on the ground, even the community would, the ordinary people would want it to be functioning. It is still largely a discussion within the boardrooms of the state houses of the different member states.
And now there are rumors that DR Congo would like to join the community too. So, Suleiman, that would be very interesting.
It would be very interesting, especially given the history with this, especially with the leadership which we have. Because, as you have said, one of the problems which the community has faced is the relationship between the leaders. For example, Kagame and Museveni, which is like a father to son or whatever. And then that one is doing also the same. You find if DRC was doing, they would face the same problem. Remember, DRC was invaded and occupied and led by the two leaders, Kagame and Museveni, for some time. And remember that DRC to date is counting over 4 million people dead in Eastern DRC as a result of conflicts, which conflicts Uganda and Rwanda have got a hand in. So emotionally, they can put it in. And if not to forget, remember, there is also a $10 billion debt which Uganda has to pay DRC as a result of the looting which they carried out during the time they had occupied the DRC. So emotionally, on top, they might join. But when the leadership, unless the leadership has changed, it will be very difficult to fill them in because they have got historical baggage. The way now the historical baggage between Museveni and Kagame and Nkurunziza are boiling up and making it very difficult for organization to function. The same will happen if DRC joins.
I see. Charles, as a wind down, is it then possible to have this solid, growing, strong political federation as end result, for as long as these countries have leaders and governance that differs, or it's a waste of time?
Well, you need to harmonize the leadership really in one direction, and whereas it would make a lot of sense to add DRC to the East African community, DRC already largely trades with the member states of the East African community. Goma trades with Uganda and Rwanda largely. Bunia, Beni, Butembo, and those other towns, all the way maybe up to around Kisangani, all those would find it much easier to trade through the Mombasa coast than they would find it trading with the coast on the other side of their country, of their vast country. If the delivery of the DRC into the East African community is seen as projected as a constituent building project of some of the leaders of the community, then it becomes difficult how it gets to integrate. South Sudan suffered exactly the same. Yes, you can give justification. This is a member country that needs a footing. We have a population to start from there. But at the end of the day, the actual motivation of adding new members, what exact value do they add, institutional strengthening of a community that remains fragile? Once you're not able to answer those questions, then you don't need process. They can take their time and come through. The European Union has been building for so many years, but still the application and integration is, one, rigorous, but two, has been extremely contentious. Why does the South African community think it can abstract these processes and succeed?
I see. Suleiman, we have a few minutes left. How long do you give, or how do you see this one pulling it off? Will it be there next 5-10 years from now?
Douglas and Charles, for you to realize the economic development within the region, you need infrastructure development. You have got the Kenyans with their standard gauge railway already in Nairobi. A country like Uganda has not even built an inch. Kenyan oil is flowing. A country like Uganda has not even had a government. Interstate trade should be flourishing. Uganda has closed the border with Uganda for months now. With the leaders of that nature, Douglas, how do you expect to have a working organization? Which means the bottom line is you can only have a way forward after Museveni has gone, Kagame has gone, Kruziza has gone, Salva Kiir has gone. Then you can now talk with the leaders who are elected within the region, who will take their country forward, not their egos and their personalities at the front. So long as we have got personalities who think they are more important than the countries which they lead, I don't give the East African community much time to go.
I see. Charles, 30 seconds.
Yes, I agree. I agree with Suleiman. But the other thing is that, yes, this community will hobble on because the people believe in it. At a broader level, people believe in it. Mm-hmm. You'll be amazed. Ugandans don't speak a lot of Kiswahili, but at every function I have been, they sing along the East African anthem much better than they sing along the Ugandan anthem, which is composed in Kiswahili. So, meaning that at a people level, that hunger is there. And I believe it will outlive the leaders who might have personal interest.
I see. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Charles Mwangushi Mpagi, East African Bureau Chief in Kampala, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Dan Brown, and our engineer was Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can still access this program by going to our main website at www.vonews.com. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vonews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga, in Washington.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. The ousted